out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 8th of November, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we're broadcasting live at radioarian.com today because we have Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson with us. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm hanging in there, Sven. I'm making it. How are you?
You've managed to get through this this election. You've managed to get through the results of this election without giving up and without seeing it as a great triumph. I mean, this is all that we've heard about all week is this election. I take it you did go out to vote, didn't you?
Oh, no, Sven. I've never voted a day in my life. No way. No, Sven. I did not vote.
I wouldn't know how.
I don't know what the inside of the voting booth looks like.
I thought you made an exception for with Donald Trump here, just because of how much
that was a rhetorical exception. That was a purely rhetorical exception. Turnout was really low anyway. But no, you know, I have several articles explaining why I don't vote in some detail. But so the answer is no.
Okay. Well, that's not going to stop us from discussing this this election result today. Anyway, and I think the first thing that we should really look at is the censorship of the advert. I mean, I just cannot believe this. A political party, a mainstream political party, puts out a party political broadcast explaining its policies, and it gets censored by all the mainstream organizations. As Americans prepared to vote in the most expensive midterm election in US history, three TV networks and Facebook pulled a controversial Trump-endorsed ad that plays on voters' fears of illegal immigrant crime, saying it's racist. The ad, paid for by the Republican Party, depicts convicted cop killer Louis Bracamontes laughing about killing cops, juxtaposed with scenes of the Central American migrant caravans and a Fox News clip where a man claims to have fled Honduras because of an attempted murder conviction. President Donald J. Trump and Republicans are making America safe again, it proclaims. Facebook was the latest platform to ban the ad, claiming it violates their policy against sensational content. NBC aired the spot during its Sunday night football broadcast, but decided not to run it again on Monday after being flooded with complaints overnight, while CNN chose not to play the ad at all. The ad, aimed at battleground states like Arizona and Florida, echoes President Trump's claim that criminals and unknown Middle Easterners are traveling with the Central American migrant caravans currently crossing Mexico on their way to the US border. Trump was unconcerned by the ad's removal, calling it effective and dismissing the network's concerns. A lot of things are offensive. Your questions are offensive a lot of the time, you know, he replied. The ad subject, Louis Bracamontes, killed two Sacramento sheriff's deputies in 2014 after being deported twice. I'm going to kill more cops soon, he says in the video, smiling. The original version of the ad inaccurately stated that Democrats let him into our country. Democrats let him stay. Actually, Bracamontes last entered the country while George W. Bush was president, and Arizona Sheriff Joe Arpaio released him after his last arrest. The ad is reminiscent of the infamous Willie Horton TV spot that aired during the 1988 election. That commercial, which describes black prison inmate Willie Horton stabbing and raping a white couple during a weekend furlough, is credited with having won the election for George W. Bush. Fox News broadcast footage last week in which a Honduran migrant in one of the caravans tells the newscaster he is fleeing Honduras after being convicted of attempted murder. I mean, that just tells us, doesn't it, that what these people are, they're criminals. They've broken the laws in their own countries, and they're claiming asylum from the police force in their own country for murder. And it's hardly like Donald Trump is mischaracterizing these people in any way. And how can he say, oh, that's okay, and just let this go and say, okay, well, the ad's effective and I don't really mind that it was banned? I mean, this is blatant political censorship of a mainstream political party by the mainstream media. I mean, this is unheard of. You never hear of this in Britain, Matt, of the TV companies banning a party political broadcast by the Conservative Party or the Labour Party. I'm really shocked that this was allowed to happen, and more hasn't actually been said about it.
I think Donald Trump is picking his battles. I remember the Willie Horton ad very well in the 88 campaign. It did not win him the election, but it was very powerful. This is what happens when you have private corporations controlling communications. They're not subject to the First Amendment. That only refers to the federal government. In fact, they're protected by the First Amendment. And that's something that we'd have really no legal vocabulary to deal with right now. Most of our political communications are mediated by private corporations. Almost all of them, in fact, are. Some of them are almost monopolies, as Facebook is. Excuse me. So this is a whole separate issue. Because they have a quasi-governmental power here as a monopoly, they need to be subject to the First Amendment. And the fact is, a political ad or a statement or an argument isn't offensive or non-offensive. It's either true or false. It's offensive to them because it's true and it hurts their agenda. That's really what it comes down to here. The other problem I have is, you know, concentrating on these individuals. Well, the caravan as such is a massive invasion. But I agree with you that Trump should not have simply let it go. He needs to start his own media company, which would be incredibly successful in this country and elsewhere. But to ban an ad from a major party and something like Monday Night Football is a huge, you know, that is clear election interference, and is designed to hurt his people.
Well, it's preventing the voting public from knowing what the policies are of the parties that they're voting for. It's saying, well, we're only going to tell you about the policies of the Democrats. We're not going to tell you the policies of the Republicans. And that is blatant interference in the elections. As you said, it's censorship. I mean, they talk about the right wing being a threat to democracy, but how much more of a threat to democracy is it to just silence one party so that nobody knows what their policies are? Thankfully, we do know what Donald Trump's policies are, but, you know, it could have had other things in that. I mean, this was a party political broadcast. As it is, the fact that it's caused such a ruckus means that it has been seen by a lot of people. Because of that, it drew so much attention to it because it was censored. Well, let's have a look at these results here then, because they've been very, very controversial. Donald Trump has said this is a great triumph. The mainstream media are portraying it like it's a huge, great loss to him. And the results actually are, in the Senate, the Republicans have got 51 and the Democrats have got 44. And apparently there are two other parties that have got two. So I'd like to find out who they are in a minute. And in the House of Representatives, the Republicans have got 197 and the Democrats have got 223. So they've increased, the Republicans have increased in the Senate, but they've decreased in the House of Representatives, and yet Trump has declared a victory. And I've got a quote here from Steve Maltzberg, which explains why Trump has declared this as a victory. He says, "We have to put it into historical perspective. Usually when the president has his first midterm elections, and that is what this is for Donald Trump, 2 years into his first term, he loses badly. For instance, Barack Obama in his first midterm election lost 63 House seats and 6 Senate seats. Bill Clinton, in his first midterm, lost 54 House seats and 8 Senate seats. The fact that Trump lost House seats but gained Senate seats, if you look at the historical context, then yes, this is a victory." So he's right to declare it a victory. But what is this going to mean for the Republican Party going on with a majority of the Democrats in the House of Representatives? And who are these other two parties that are in the Senate, Matt?
Well, off the top of my head, I haven't read about them. Remember, Bernie Sanders ran as an independent at one point. Milwaukee's had, I think, what, 6 Socialist Party mayors. You know, so there are a few of them that do okay. New York State has its own conservative party for many years since Republicans were so liberal under the Rockefellers. But what it means is, the House is where the money bills are to originate. The Senate is where foreign policy is supposed to be affirmed. So in a simple way, it may be that they may stop any kind of Trump agenda on the money side, but not on the foreign policy side, which I think is bad for us in general. House of Representatives were meant to be the more powerful half third of the legislature. Because it being more popular, it has full control over where money bills begin. And that's the most significant aspect of this. So the committee chairs are going to change. You'll have Democrats running every committee. You have a majority. All committees then switch over. That means the committees are run by Democrats. So you have a Republican Senate that may want a foreign policy that says X, but then the House may not want to finance it on the other side. So I don't know. But this is – the U.S. government is meant to be divided this way. The reason why you have this shift in party every midterm election, which, by the way, very few people care about. Usually the average turnout's like 30%. But it's because no one wants one party to rule everything. The American system of government, for better or for worse, was designed so that the branches of government are fighting each other rather than the public. And now I don't think this is in the minds of the voting public as they're voting, but this is just how it turns out.
Well, it sort of makes sense to think about it that way. So you've either got a coalition or you've got them competing with one another and making deals with one another. So nobody has the full control. And really, we would have preferred it the other way around then, I guess, so that Trump was able to do his domestic policies and not be able to go to war in Syria. Things like that. So I can understand why that would be better around the other way. I did see a report by Ann Coulter. She seemed to think this was very good as well. She said that the Republicans that were against the other Republicans that were calling other Republicans white supremacists and things like that, they've actually lost their seats. And she also said that this means that everyone will see Nancy Pelosi leading the House and they will see how dreadful she is, which will mean that Trump will definitely get in next time. I mean, everybody seems pretty much unanimous on saying this means that Trump is going to win when it comes up to his election in 2 years' time. But yesterday night, there was a lot of excitement, and I thought this was absolutely fantastic. The press conference that Donald Trump gave and his interaction with the journalists there, and it's continued on until today. CNN White House correspondent Jim Acosta has been denied access to the White House after getting into a heated shouting match with President Donald Trump and pulling a microphone away from a female aide at a press conference. A Secret Service agent denied Acosta entry to the White House grounds on Wednesday evening and revoked his hard pass, the long-term press pass issued to the White House press corps. On Wednesday afternoon, Acosta got into a heated verbal back and forth with Trump that resulted in the president telling him to sit down as the journalist wrestled with a female aide to keep her from passing the mic to another journalist. President Trump believes in a free press and expects and welcomes tough questions of him and his administration. We will, however, never tolerate a reporter placing his hands on a young woman just trying to do her job as a White House intern, Sarah Sanders said. This conduct is absolutely unacceptable. Contrary to CNN's assertions, there is no greater demonstration of the president's support for a free press than the event he held today. Only they could attack the president for not supporting a free press in the midst of him taking 68 questions from 35 different reporters, Sanders said. The fact that CNN is proud of the way their employee behaved is not only disgusting, it's an example of their outrageous disregard for everyone, including young women who work in this administration. In a tweet in response, Acosta called Sanders' statement a lie without elaborating. Well, I watched this and he did lay his hands on this young girl, this young intern that was trying to get the microphone from him, and he was incredibly rude. And I think anybody watching that will be on Trump's side, and they've been portraying it on the mainstream media today over here in Britain. They've been saying that when Trump walked away from the lectern there oh, it was as if he was, you know, walking down to go and have a fight with this Acosta. But it certainly didn't look like that to me. It looked like he was going to walk out of the press conference. You know, if this guy isn't going to shut up and have some manners, I'm not going to give a press conference. It certainly didn't look to me like he was sort of rolling his sleeves up to go down there and thump Acosta. What did you think of this, Matt? I mean, I had to watch it twice. I did find it very enjoyable to see him putting down this journalist like this.
Well, it wasn't a shouting match. No one raised their voice. These people from CNN truly, honestly believe that they are democracy and that they have some ethereal right to access to the White House. They don't. CNN is so violently anti-Trump and is so biased. They have no right to be at the White House. They serve, you know, they get there if Trump wants them there, period. Now, at the time this was going on, the fact that he kind of wrestled with this skinny little intern wasn't the issue. You know, she was just doing her job, of course. That wasn't the concern. The concern was that when she tried to take the mic away, he pulled it back again. But this level of arrogance, and you know, what the guy was saying at the time was that this is not an invasion. The caravan is fine. They're far from the border. You're overreacting, you know. And of course, Trump had already dealt with this question before. And then he pulls the microphone away back from the girl. Then another reporter right next to him came to his defense, saying, oh, no, he's a stand-up reporter. He's a good man. You shouldn't have done that. And then Trump says, well, I don't like you very much either. No one trusts the press, although everyone seems to go to it. And this just makes it worse. They're not pretending to be unbiased anymore. The American press is a very important part, if not the most important part, of the liberal leftist activist movement in this country. That's what they are. That's what they're for. So calling them biased doesn't help. They know that already. That's their purpose. So they have absolutely no right to access to the White House. And this guy, but these people really will tell you, we are the voice of democracy. And if you do anything to us, you're attacking the free press by definition. That's how bad it is. That's how arrogant these people are.
Well, it wasn't just saying that Donald Trump isn't right to call it an invasion. I mean, this journalist didn't actually provide any proof to show that it isn't an invasion. I mean, what else would you call thousands of non-whites, non-Americans, converging on America, burning the American flag, throwing rocks at police, fighting with police, admitting that they are actually murderers that are on the run from police? I mean, what else would you call that? You know, it's not an orderly.
Yeah, and that's what the issue was. Yeah, that's why, you know, he lost his patience with him.
Yeah, it's not a cue.
He just gave a very, very arrogant statement. Yeah, that's it.
Well, and then after that as well, I mean, he's like going on about this Russia nonsense that's gone on for 2 years now, that they haven't actually found any evidence whatsoever of Russian collusion. And he just starts bringing that up. It's like, you know, they're a one-track record, aren't they? They just repeat the same things over and over and over again. I mean, anybody would get wound up with that. Obviously, Trump has got wound up with that, and they are incredibly rude to Sarah Huckabee. Is that her name? She seems really, really nice to me, really decent, very hardworking, and very supportive of President Trump, and she puts up with a lot. It was very good to see the smile on her face while this was going on, and great to find out that it's continued today, and he's had his pass removed. I hope Donald Trump does that to more people. And he should really be making a space for InfoWars in there and the people that supported him during his campaign. He needs to go further, I think. But we've also had another news story that was actually missed while all this was going on. There was a big hate crime hoax that took place, which seems to be hushed up. I the only place I've heard about this is at RT in the article that you sent me, Matt. And it says, in a bizarre twist, the man who sprayed anti-Semitic graffiti on a Brooklyn synagogue turned out to be queer, black, former anti-hate crime intern James Polite, a 26-year-old with loving Jewish foster parents. So he's black, Jewish, and anti-racist, and he was the guy that actually put this graffiti up. Now, I wouldn't call that a bizarre twist. I would call that a predictable result, basically, that so often happens. Less than a week after a gunman murdered 11 worshippers at a Pittsburgh synagogue, anti-Semitic graffiti was found scrawled inside Union Temple in Brooklyn's predominantly Jewish Prospect Heights neighborhood. The graffiti read, "Die Jew Rats," and just Hitler, just simply Hitler. A democratic political event scheduled at the synagogue on Thursday night was cancelled, and police investigated the incident as a hate crime. After being caught on the synagogue's CCTV cameras, James Polite was arrested on Friday. Far from being an archetypal tattooed skinhead, Polite is a black former Democratic intern who had his college education bankrolled by the New York Times Neediest Cases Fund. Polite had a rough upbringing, according to a 2017 New York Times profile. He told the Times he identifies as queer and felt misunderstood at home. As a young teenager, he requested that he be placed in foster care and spent the following years shunted from home to home. So he requested to go into foster care himself. I mean, how progressive and liberal do you get? Polite then met New York City Council Speaker Christine Quinn at a gay pride rally in 2008 and landed himself an internship with a Democratic councilwoman. Under Quinn's tutelage, Polite worked on anti-hate crime initiatives and lent a hand to her unsuccessful bid for mayor in 2013. In return, Quinn, who referred to Polite as the adopted child of the Quinn administration, wrote him a glowing recommendation to Brandeis University. At the same time, an array of do-gooders chipped in and gave Polite a helping hand. Josh Waletsky and Jenny Leveson, a Brooklyn Jewish couple on a mission to foster an LGBTQ youth, took Polite into their home, and charity group Children's Aid facilitated the placement. When Polite began his studies at Brandeis, the Neediest Cases Fund helped him financially. Polite struggled in college and smoked marijuana to cope with stress. After a leave of absence in 2015, he was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, that managed to resume his studies after some time away. Before last week's vandalism, the man appears to have been unstable. He railed against Jews in a series of Facebook posts, tagged his adopted parents into them. Polite posted a grainy cell phone picture of himself burning an American flag and wrote that a new civil war is here. And then we've got a quote of what he actually wrote. "Nobody got to die. Mexico, Latin America, Caribbean versus Jew nigger pigs. One person touched me, this whole shit a smoking." That's whatever that means. In the comments, friends urged Polite to seek professional help, and his one-time mentor, Quinn, wrote after his arrest that she was simply and utterly devastated. "I knew this young man," she wrote, "and while he has experienced hardship that most people can't even imagine, his actions are inexcusable." While Polite's life seems to have gone down a dark path, from New York Times poster boy to synagogue vandal, he is not the first unlikely suspect to be busted for hate crimes in recent years. Last year, Israeli police arrested a 19-year-old Israeli Jew in connection with hundreds of bomb threats made to Jewish community centres across America. But the big thing about this, Matt, is this really is not a bizarre twist, is it? This is a regular occurrence, that it's actually ethnic minorities themselves that are involved in these hate crime hoaxes. I mean, they just talked there about this Israeli Jew that made hundreds of bomb threats, but there was also a poo swastika that I can remember, and that turned out to be a minority that had done that. I mean, all the time we're hearing about this. And one thing that tips you off is the graffiti. I mean, the graffiti that just says Hitler and die Jews, I mean, it's not exactly very well thought out, is it? It's basically just trying to draw attention to it for some reason. I think this guy was just trying to get sympathy, maybe, or get more attention. Maybe he hadn't had enough attention. What do you think about this, Matt? And why haven't we actually heard about this? Is it because it was a Jewish black guy that actually did this, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Jewish in the sense that he was, you know, foster son of a Jewish family, wealthy Jewish family. Significantly, you know, if you're non-white, and especially if you're gay and you come out in favor of the liberal agenda, you're going to have money thrown at you all over the place. This guy has privileges that none of us can comprehend. The New York Times, all these foundations, everything else. He was an employee of these corporations, and being on the anti-hate crime stuff, the only thing this guy didn't do was wear a mask. Of course, his whole purpose was to continue this, you know, get more and more sympathy. Anybody who attacks a synagogue or anything like that is doing Jews' bidding. They love this kind of thing. This kind of thing is excitement for them because they know it builds sympathy and it builds, you know, Jews will donate more money. And, you know, being able to ban people like us each time something like this happens, they get closer and closer. Once they found out that it was an employee of one of these places searching for sympathy, they dropped the story. But his IQ was so low that he didn't even wear a damn mask. He knew that at synagogues, they have cameras everywhere. This is a wealthy place and he doesn't wear a mask. It was just dumb on his part, but that was the only mistake he made. And yes, you're right. Every time I've seen the thousands of these hoaxes, what these people write or scrawl or draw is always so infantile that, you know, none of our people would ever do it. But anytime, you know, when I see something like this, it's automatically, I know the left did it. And because anyone of us who did it would simply be giving them a great gift. And we all know that.
Yeah, vandalizing synagogues. What is the point of that? I mean, we're trying to reach white people. We're trying to reach British people, American people, and tell them what's going on in their countries. Our target audience are our own people. Our target audience is not Jews. We don't need to be telling Jews that they're bad people. You know, we need to be telling white people to watch out for what's going on in our countries. You know, scrawling graffiti on a synagogue, it's no help whatsoever. Even, you know, doing the same thing to a mosque. Okay, it might be a bit of a kick. Oh, yeah, we've got one back on the enemy. But not really, because it just serves their interests. They can claim to be victims then. They can claim that this has been brought about by hate speech online and we need to shut down these websites. And it doesn't serve anybody any good. What does serve people good is, you know, so putting stickers in places where white people are going to be, in bus stops, in places like that, or putting in bits of paper with websites on them and slipping them into history books in the library, things like that. We want to be reaching white people. We don't want to be winding up Jews and Negroes. I mean, look at all the trouble that Gab have actually gone through this week. You know, I just like to say, I really, you know, lots of credit to Andrew Torba for keeping Gab going and for taking such a principled stand. Did you hear about all this that happened since the shooting, Matt? Have you heard about Andrew Torba? The man's a Christian as well. He's on Christian principles that he's keeping this social networking site up. Did you hear about that?
Yes, I certainly did. When I saw, you know, any last name that starts with Taub, I think Jewish right away. But he's not. I think it's one of the reasons that Gab was founded. I have a Gab account. I never look at it. I can't even remember the last time I looked at it. But people realize that because of the tremendous responsibility that these media networking sites have, they have to be completely neutral. If they're not, it is election interference, among other things. You know, it's censorship when a powerful corporation smashes speech, no different than the state. That's not how it's defined. That's how it really is. And you still have a lot of people who don't realize this. Private entities can be as oppressive as government entities can be. In fact, more so when you live in a country that's completely privatized. So, yes, it's a very principled stand, and there's no question about it. It's a good thing.
Well, this is what we're learning now, isn't it? I mean, we've all heard about communism and the USSR and how they censored people and how they stifled free speech. And it was all put across that it was capitalism and the free world. That's where you had your free speech. And now we're discovering it's these major companies, it's the multinational corporations, they're the ones that are silencing the speech, especially on the internet. That's why it's so good that, you know, he appears to have defeated them. And one of the reasons why he defeated them is another domain registrar called Epic that is backing him, that is standing behind him, because they tried to take the domain away from him. Gab.ai is now gab.com. And this is the problem that hit Andrew Anglin, the Daily Stormer, and lots of right-wing sites since then. They took their domain away from them. And now there's this domain registrar who has taken a principled stand and has given gab.com their domain, basically. So anyone who is having problems with domain names and registering them, that's who they need to be seeing. We've now got somebody who is standing up for us. I mean, he may not be a nationalist, but he obviously believes in free speech. And that's the principle that's at risk here, is free speech and being able to discuss the other side of politics. I mean, we really are moving towards a one world state unless we have people that are prepared to stand up like Andrew Tauber and like this EPIC. And I think this midterm election has really shown that with the way that they just pulled that advert. And now that they've done it once, they're going to do it again. The same as now that they've removed the domain name from these internet sites and they kicked Andrew Anglin off. They kicked loads more off. Now that they've found out that they can just remove adverts that Donald Trump puts up, I think they're going to remove more. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if they just stopped reporting on some of the things that he says, and they'll just pretend that we're still living under Obama. It's a sick world that we're living in today, Matt.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. But remember, these people have no particular interest in the abstraction of free speech. They're part of the agenda. They don't really care about this kind of thing. They may use it as a principle when their people get in trouble. But for me personally, I never refer to, you know, my right to speak. My right to speak comes from the fact that I'm correct, that I can think critically, and that I have the facts straight. Not that I have some abstract right to free speech. It says that I'm right. That's what really matters. And that's what's the issue here. These people do very poorly in debates. They have very little on their side. They don't have a leg to stand on. And so they need to shut us up. This isn't exactly coming from a position of strength.
That's the point, isn't it? You know, they know that we're right. That's why they want to silence us. That's why they refuse to debate us, because they do know that we are actually right. And I know you've spoken about that lots of times, about the responsibility of free speech and how you have to be right, and it's not a license for idiots to just tell lies. That's what the left want it to be. They want it to just be them telling lies and none of us being able to stand up and speak the truth back to them. Anyway, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.